Chapter 36. Reacher drove a mile and stopped at Halfway's all-night coffee shop and ate a cheeseburger and drank three mugs of coffee. The burger was rare and damp, and the coffee was about as good as the Hope Diner's. The mug was a little worse, but acceptable. He read a ragged copy of the previous morning's newspaper all the way through, and then jammed himself into the corner of his booth and dozed upright for an hour. He left the place at 5 in the morning, when the first of the breakfast customers came in and disturbed him with bright chatter and the smell of recent showers. He filled Vaughn's truck at the all-night gas station and then drove back out of town, heading east on the same rough road he had come in on, the mountains far behind him, and the dawn waiting to happen up ahead. He kept the speedometer needle fixed on 40 and passed the MP post again 52 minutes later. The place was still quiet. Two guys were in the guard shack, one facing north and one facing south. Their nightlight was still burning. He figured Reveille would be at 6:30 and Chow at 7. The night watch would eat dinner and the day watch would eat breakfast, all in the same hour. Same food, probably. Combat FOBs were light on amenities. He waved and kept on going at a steady 40 miles an hour, which put him next to the metal plant at exactly 6 o'clock in the morning, the start of the workday. The arena lights were already on, and the place was lit up bright and blue, like day. The parking lot was filling up fast. Headlights were streaming west out of town, dipping, turning, raking the rough ground, stopping, clicking off. Reacher parked neatly between a sagging Chrysler sedan and a battered Ford pickup. He slid out and locked up and put the keys in his pocket and joined a converging crowd of men shuffling their way toward the personnel gate. An uneasy feeling, same sensation as entering a baseball stadium wearing the colors of the visiting team. Stranger in the house. All around him, guys glanced at him curiously and gave him a little more space than they were giving each other. But nothing was said. There was no overt hostility, just wariness and covert inspection, as the crowd shuffled along through the pre-dawn twilight, a yard at a time. The personnel gate was a double section of the metal wall, folded back on hinges complex enough to accommodate the quilted curves of the wall's construction. The dirt path through it was beaten dusty by a million footsteps. Close to the gate there was no jostling, no impatience. Men lined up neatly like automatons, not fast, not slow, but resigned. They all needed to clock in, but clearly none of them wanted to. The line shuffled slowly forward, a yard, two, three. The guy in front of Reacher stepped through the gate. Reacher stepped through the gate. Immediately inside, there were more metal walls, head high like cattle chutes, dividing the crowd left and right. The right-hand chute led to a holding pen where Reacher guessed the part-time workers would wait for the call. It was already a quarter full with men standing quiet and patient. The guys going left didn't look at them. Reacher went left. The left-hand chute dog-legged immediately and narrowed down to 4 feet in width. It carried the line of shuffling men past an old-fashioned punch clock centered in a giant slotted array of time cards. Each man pulled his card and offered it up to the machine and waited for the dull thump of the stamp and then put the card back again. The rhythm was slow and relentless. The whisk of stiff paper against metal, the thump of the stamp, the click, as the card was bottomed back in its slot. The clock was showing 6:14, which was exactly right, according to the time in Reacher's head. Reacher walked straight past the machine. The chute turned again, and he followed the guy in front for 30 feet and then stepped out into the northeast corner of the arena. The arena was vast, just staggeringly huge. The line of lights on the far wall ran close to a mile into the distance, and dimmed and shrank and blended into a tiny vanishing point in the southwest corner. The far wall itself was at least a half mile away. The total enclosed area must have been 300 acres. 300 football fields. Unbelievable. Reacher stepped aside to let the line of men get past him. Here and there in the vastness, small swarms of guys were already busy. Trucks and cranes were moving. They threw harsh shadows in the stadium lights. Some of the cranes were bigger than anything Reacher had seen in a dockyard. Some of the trucks were as big as earth-moving machines. There were gigantic crushers set on enormous concrete plinths. The crushers had bright, oily hydraulic rams thicker than redwood trunks. There were crucibles as big as sailboats and retorts as big as houses. There were piles of wrecked cars 10 stories high. The ground was soaked with oil and rainbow puddles of diesel and littered with curled metal swarf, and where it was dry it glittered with shiny dust. Steam and smoke and fumes and sharp chemical smells were drifting everywhere. There was roaring and hammering, rolling outward in waves and beating against the metal perimeter and bouncing straight back in again. Bright flames danced behind open furnace doors, like a vision of hell. Some guys seemed to be heading for pre-assigned jobs, and others were milling in groups as if waiting for direction. Reacher skirted around behind them and followed the north wall, tiny and insignificant in the chaos. Way ahead of him, the vehicle gate was opening. 5 semi-trailers were parked in a line, waiting to move out. On the road, they would look huge and lumbering. Inside the plant, they looked like toys. The 2 security Tahoes were parked side by side, tiny white dots in the vastness. Next to them was a stack of 40-foot shipping containers. They were piled 5 high. Each one looked tiny. South of the vehicle gate was a long line of prefabricated metal offices. They were jacked up on short legs to make them level. They had lights on inside. At the left-hand end of the line, 2 offices were painted white and had red crosses on their doors. The first aid station. Next to it, a white vehicle was parked, the ambulance. Next to the ambulance was a long line of fuel and chemical tanks. Beyond them, a sinister platoon of men in thick aprons and black welding masks used cutting torches on a pile of twisted scrap. Blue flames threw hideous shadows. Reacher hugged the north wall and kept on moving. Men looked at him and looked away, unsure. A 1/4 of the way along the wall, his path was blocked by a giant pyramid of old oil drums. They were painted faded red and stacked 10 high, stepped like a staircase. Reacher paused and glanced around and levered himself up to the base of the tier, glanced around again and climbed halfway up the stack, and then turned and stood precariously and held on tight and used the elevation to get an overview of the whole place. He hadn't seen the whole place. Not yet. There was more. Much more. What had looked like the south boundary was, in fact, an interior partition. Same height as the perimeter walls, same material, same color, same construction, with the sheer face and the horizontal cylinder, same purpose as an impregnable barrier. But it was only an internal division with a closed gate. Beyond it, the outer perimeter enclosed at least another 100 acres, another 100 football fields. The gate was wide enough for large trucks. There were deep ruts in the ground leading to it. Beyond it, there were heavy cranes and high stacks of shipping containers piled in chevron shapes. The containers looked dumped, as if casually, but they were placed and combined carefully enough to block a direct view of ground-level activity from any particular direction. The internal gate had some kind of a control point in front of it. Reacher could make out 2 tiny figures stumping around in small circles, bored, their hands in their pockets. He watched them for a minute and then lifted his gaze again beyond the partition. Cranes and screens, some smoke, some distant sparks, some kind of activity. Other than that, nothing to see. Plenty to hear, but none of it was useful. It was impossible to determine which noises were coming from where. He waited another minute and watched the plant's internal traffic. Plenty of things were moving, but nothing was heading for the internal gate. It was going to stay closed. He turned east and looked at the sky. Dawn was coming. He turned back and got his balance and climbed down the oil drum staircase, stepped off to the rough ground, and a voice behind him said, "Who the hell are you?"